name?
Judy.
David Carrier?
Wow, that's a blast from the past. Monday, February 13th, 2012, Planning Commission meeting to order. Kim, if you will take the roll call, please.
Sure.
I'm here.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Godwin?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Powell?
Here.
Thank you. And what I don't see here, oh, I do see it now. Thank you. I guess we come to the part of comments from citizens. I believe we have at least one citizen here that would like to make some comments. Mr. Anderson? Do we have a...
Oh, Mr. Anderson.
If you could give us your name and address for the record, please.
Absolutely. Paul Anderson, 129 East Ripon Drive.
Thank you.
The big city of Monroe since before any of you were born.
Thank you for coming in.
Disregarding the East Monroe Economic Development Group, the Board of Governing and Chairman Monroe Planning Commissioners. This letter is going to supplement our earlier letter dated December 22, 2011, stating our opposition to the proposal by the East Monroe Economic Development Group to effect a comprehensive plan amendment that could change the limits of the subject property from limited open space to general commercial. As our earlier submittal is evidence, the subject property presents extensive development challenges that raise serious questions regarding any effort to rebuild the property from limited open space to general commercial. These developmental and environmental challenges include the following. 40% rates of all returning properties to north of the subject property, which have a history of slides and erosion. Subject property includes a stream and numerous wetlands, including sensitive habitat for native salmon. Subject property serves a wildlife corridor. Property frequently floods and is in a flood hazard area. Commercial development of the property will result in significant noise, light, and other aesthetic issues affecting adjoining property owners, and any commercial development of the property will present significant issues with the Washington Department of Transportation and present serious risks related to ingress and egress to Highway 2. The Monroe Planning Commission is well aware of these issues and has consistently rejected any attempt to rezone the subject property from limited open space to general commercial for obvious good reasons. We are concerned that the city of Monroe is giving short shrift to these environmental and developmental challenges as attempting to proceed with an environmental impact statement on a failure review basis. To date, we have received little or no information as to the progress of this failure review, and many of our questions are well now answered. We believe the city of Monroe has an obligation to an open, transparent process so citizens can effectively participate in voicing concerns regarding proposed zoning changes. While some have stated that that is stacked against us, as the proposed zoning change with the debt project would merit certain city council members, we believe our voices of concern will ultimately prevail. Frankly, no action should be taken unless and until a complete environmental impact statement prepared addressing all environmental issues. While the Planning Commission has no jurisdiction to determine whether a phased environmental impact statement is appropriate in this instance, we believe the Planning Commission can contribute to raise legitimate issues with any attempt to rezone the property from limited open space to general commercial, given the many environmental issues that should be carefully considered before any final decision is made with respect to proposed comprehensive plan amendment. the cities of Monroe if any of these risks ripens into actual liability which would further drain the city's financial resources. Please give careful and thoughtful consideration to the mitigation and challenges facing any attempt to rezone the subject property from minimum open space to general commercial. Commissioner Lisa Miller, Laura Anderson, Jeffrey W. Reinfeldt. There's seven copies for the... For that, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Any questions?
Commissioner Dorst? Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And I know, I hope you know that I always appreciate when you come forward to speak for us. Seriously, I mean that with all sincerity.
Well,
I do.
I thought you had them for next week.
Well, I'm concerned you'd be more than welcome. But seriously, Mr. Anderson, and Paul, perhaps you can help with this a little bit. Mr. Anderson's right, that EIS process seems to have been going on for quite some time. Do we have some idea from staff's perspective of when it's going to be wrapped up at this point?
I believe it's, at least the draft's going to be done the end of this month. So about the time that we may be first going back to start considering this application, that should be available to us.
And at that point, that draft would be open for what, public comment then for a period of time?
At some point, it's going to have to be put off for comment, yes.
May we have a copy of the applicant's urgent opportunity to evaluate the phase and into the phase where the full environmental impact statement?
I believe it's phased. Definitely not a full environmental impact statement.
I'm telling the rest, I don't think it should be worded on, but that's just the opinion. Thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
I'm excused, right?
You understand, I wish.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Is there any other citizens that would like to make any comments at this time about anything that's not on the agenda tonight? All right, then we will move on. Commissioners, we have the January 9th, 2012 meeting minutes before us. Are there any comments or corrections? Dave?
With respect to the minutes on the top of page 2, we've got starting the bottom of 1. It talks about the, and I hope this is a little loud, isn't it, Kim? Picking me up a little too much. It talks about the definition of LOSA, the limited open space airport, and the commission suggesting that it be worded in such a way that if the airport would ever become defunct, the new land use designation definition would fit for the surrounding area. And I'm not exactly sure what we said in discussing it, but I think that maybe it was to the contrary. I know that I expressed concerns with the language being too loose on LOSA, the definition of what a limited open space airport was, simply for the fact that the intent is to preserve and enable an airport, and recognize the fact that if in fact the airport did go away, it would probably be necessary to revisit the comp plan with respect to that area and figure out what else would happen to that property. Commissioners, anyone else have any other recollection on that?
Yes, so it was kind of vague here, the way it was written up, and I thought we were going to do that at the time. So you were right. And there was something in it about the housing on the north side, too.
My point is that this isn't intended to define what LOSA is yet, but I just don't, and maybe Kim, maybe I'm speaking out of place, but maybe my recollection isn't good. I don't remember suggesting that it should be loose enough to allow it to be something else than an airport if it's the airport went away.
Right.
I would concur. I don't know if any of the other commissioners recall. Because I think what we would have done is, if we would decide that it wasn't going to be an airport anymore, we would have abandoned the airport designation and gone to something else. So I don't know if that's maybe what was being said here, that if we abandon LOSA altogether and have it redesignated, then we would have it redesignated as something near the surrounding areas.
But we understood that if all of the overlay designations were to become non-existent, that we would have to revisit the entire area and look at it one more time and say, okay, now that there's no longer going to be an airport, we can look at it in that context. So I agree with Dave's assessment.
Thank you.
So if there are no there where you want that reworded or stricken? That sentence that it was recommended?
Dave?
Sure, I'd be happy to make a suggestion. I think that we could leave the part that says it was recommended when creating the definition of LoSA. It'd be written so that the airport would ever become defunct, a new land use designation would be identified for the property. Paul, does your recollection, were you here for that meeting or was that Brad?
I was here for that meeting and I remember we were talking about the definition without giving any detail about what it might include, but I, frankly, I don't remember the comment about what would happen if the airport was not there.
I certainly, I mean, I would not have said that it should be so broad that it could just go on to be something else if the airport went away. I mean, that would be defeating in its own way. So I think some sort of clarification is important. So my suggestion would stand. A new land use designation would be identified and applied or identified and adopted for the surrounding area.
I can change that and bring that back next meeting.
Okay. Would that be all right, Tim? Commissioner, Sam?
Sure.
Sounds good. Thank you. We'll just table that for until next meeting.
All right, that same section, starting on the first page, very end, the applicant will eventually apply for a rezone of this area and define the uses that will be allowed. I don't believe it's the applicant's purview, and I don't think that was on intent that they would define the uses that would be allowed. That would be taken on the city side after consideration of what they are proposing.
I agree. I think we were looking for input from the applicant, I think, as far as I thought.
Just something to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you catch that, Kim?
Yeah, I'll just listen to that whole section.
Okay.
And see if I can reword it differently. Listen carefully.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioners, any other comments or corrections before we move on? All right. Now we come to our new commissioner introduction. We have a new commissioner, Commissioner Tuttle, and it's customary that they usually give some comments about themselves and give us a background.
Okay.
You're welcome to share if you would like.
Sure. I'm Bridget Tuttle. I have lived in Monroe for 11 years. Went to high school in Snohomish, so it's not a far away neighbor. I have worked in Monroe School District at quite a few local businesses. I've been on a private school board, a lot of public school committees at my kids' school, Salem Woods. I was obviously on the city council for 18 months. I have two kids and a husband. We are small business owners. I don't know what else you want to know about, but I think I used to answer phones for Dave in high school.
That's when she was in high school.
When I was in high school. That's really all. I wanted to stay involved, so that's why I applied for the spot on the commission.
Good, welcome. Welcome.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you. All right.
Okay, no questions for her.
Sure.
Yeah. What was that graduated?
92.
Okay.
I'm 38.
You probably had my relatives, teachers over there.
Mr. Rodman.
Mr. Rodman.
I was my driving ed teacher.
That was in Mr. Ramberg?
Mr. Ramberg.
Yeah.
Also, my cousin. Car driver's ed teacher.
Yeah. Barry and Dick and Bob, yeah, all three of them.
That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I remember those guys.
Okay.
Yeah. So thank you for, you know, if there's anything I need to know to get caught up, I would love to. I know when I started on the council before, kind of every man for yourself, you got to catch up on your own. So if there are things that are relevant, Paul's been with me a couple times to go over things, and I would love to be brought into the fold and not left to figure it all out by myself, so.
Not a problem, man.
Okay.
We'll keep secrets here as far as looking at this.
I'm not insinuating any secrets, so.
Well, I did note that the mayor mentioned you like the casual atmosphere, and that is something that
I did.
You're pretty casual here.
I'm pretty casual myself, so.
Good.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, and we'll move on to election of officers for the chair and the vice chair. Anybody want to make any nominations?
I'll make a nomination for chair. That Chairman Lutz has done a great job in his past term, and I would be in full support of you continuing that position. So I'd make a motion that you be reappointed as chair of the Mineral Planning Commission.
Sounds like a good idea, second.
Thank you. All right, that's a motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. And thank you for your vote of confidence. I hope to continue to improve. We also have a position of vice chair that we need to nominate. Make any nominations for that?
Question?
Dave? Yeah.
Well, aren't you the current vice chair?
I am.
We've had so few opportunities to serve as Mr. Chairman Leeds. Very consistently showing up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not to hog the floor, but I would make a nomination. Commissioner Christensen be once again appointed to serve in the position of vice chair.
Second. All right, there's a motion for Commissioner Christensen by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we move on to our public hearings. Our first one is ZCA 2011-01, the airport compatibility notice.
2012.
Oh, excuse me, 2012. What did I say?
2011.
2012-01, the airport compatibility notice.
I did ask if I should be recused from being involved in this discussion. Since I am adjacent to the airport property.
And I appreciate that. I think with this particular item, I whatever your conscience tells you, but this is just basically about requiring notice, which Commissioner Popelka will introduce. Do you have a comment on that?
Go ahead. Yes. Bill, we had some discussion with Zach Well, our city attorney,
mm-hmm.
about yourself and Commissioner Sherwood owning property next to or very adjacent to the airport. And the attorney's opinion was that there was no conflict of interest, and that actually was a formality at the commission meeting when this is on the agenda. You should make a statement that you do own property in the vicinity of the airport. And if there's any objection from the audience, then you can step down. Otherwise, he seemed to be pretty clear that there was nothing to be considered a conflict of interest in this application.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience objecting to Commissioner Christensen remaining up here during this public hearing?
I say if you're comfortable.
Okay. No objections. Thank you. We'll go ahead and turn it over to Planning Manager.
Okay. This first item, just as a reminder, is about mailing out a notice to property owners in the airport compatibility overlay zone that was established by the city back in late 2006. And when that overlay zone was adopted, part of the ordinance required that every 5 years the city notify every property owner within this overlay. Notify them that their property is within this zone and it may be affected by airport operations. It's a kind of a red flag to remind people that they are in this situation. But the way it currently reads is that it's required that we send each owner of 2,100 properties an entire chapter from the zoning code, which would be about 10,000 pages of paper, double-sided. And And our objective with this is to make a very simple change to the zoning code that deletes the requirement for sending a copy of the full chapter. We intend to send a postcard that would have the required language, which reads, "Your property is within the airport compatibility overlay and you may be impacted by noise relating to activities at First Airfield. You may be required to provide First Airfield with a navigation easement and are subject to the land use requirements of Chapter 1860 of the code." We would still include that, and we would also give some basic information in English and some contact information and a map, so that anyone that had questions could certainly call, check on the website, or get some more information. My fear is that if we send them 10 pages of code language, they won't understand what it's about. So we would very much like to make this change to relieve us of that burden of sending out that code. And this has to be sent out by March 31st. We are on track to, if we get a recommendation tonight, to move that through council and approval and have the ordinance in effect in time to make that date.
Great. Thank you. Commissioners, any questions before we open to public testimony for Mr. Pavelka? Dave?
Well, I think that's probably a good idea, and I'm not sure that we'll hear any more public testimony, but I would also like to see, and I was glad to say, actually, that you mentioned the links would be included in the notice as far as where they can find the information on the website. But would it be worthwhile to, and I guess I put this to the commission, to include some sort of language that says that upon request, a copy of the ordinance may be picked up at City Hall? If someone, doesn't have the ability to print one out on the internet, go to the internet to read it, and that would save us from having to mail it, an obligatory mailing, but also facilitate the delivery of information to the public if they so desired. So certainly we can come back and talk further on that, but that would be one thought I have going into this public hearing.
Thank you. We could offer that, and if they do call, we could say you're welcome to come pick one up, but for the early one.
Okay.
That's all I have for now.
Thank you. Commissioners, any other questions? All right. Then I will open this up to the public testimony portion of this meeting, and I looked and didn't see anyone on the list earlier. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to make any comments regarding this item in the public hearing? No? Then I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
I move.
Second.
Motion been made by Commissioner Rodman, seconded by Commissioner Christensen to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. And we still have to, before a motion is made, we have opportunity for discussion and then we would close the public testimony. Is there anybody wanting to offer any discussion or further clarification? Dave?
Just to follow up on my earlier comment. Well, I'm looking at the highlighted paragraph in the ordinance under section 18.60.070A, General Standards 1A. Is there any need to elaborate at all as to what should be included in the notice or the availability of a copy if someone so desired? I mean, at this point, we're just talking about deleting the last six words. But should we actually perhaps, on the other hand, expand just a little bit to say that the notice should include links to the ordinance and that hard copies shall be made available to those requesting copies at City Hall?
We could do that. That 5 years from now, that's done again, that would be consistent with what we're trying to accomplish here. We're dropping part of it, but we're also making up the difference.
And it would be effective for this year too, would it not?
It was.
Yes. Right, we're doing this to affect the change for this year's mailing.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to add a couple of phrases to that effect as a part of this paragraph in this code.
Okay.
Those are my only comments.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments on that addition or objections there at all? None? All right. Any other questions or comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Roblin to close the public hearing. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Well, if there's nothing else, I would entertain a motion for a recommendation if nobody has any other comments or questions.
I'll be happy to make the motion since I've done the most talking on this. I'd recommend that with respect to ZCA 2012-01, amendment for airport compatibility notice requirement, that the Planning Commission recommend a further recommendation to the City Council to approve the proposed amendment as set forth in the staff report, and to include in that language, in that section that earlier referred to, some language relating to the inclusion of links as to what information can be found on the city's website, and also noting in the language of the ordinance that upon the request of an interested party, a copy of the ordinance could be obtained at City Hall, or something to that effect.
I second that.
Great.
I'm glad you said that.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Roblin. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. All right. Our second public hearing of the evening is ZCA 2012-03, mixed use side yard setbacks. And this is also being brought to us by Planning Manager Popelka. Mr. Trill? Oh, pardon me.
I may have to recuse myself on this since I own property in this area. That makes a difference, doesn't it?
You know, I think that's one of those areas where if you don't feel comfortable, then you can certainly
yourself. If I don't take discussion in this section, it'll be all right.
The recommendation is to allow, to change our original recommendation, original suggestion to allow 5-foot setbacks for residential homes only.
Oh, it is?
Although, you know, someone could construe that that would enhance the value of your property.
And both.
Right.
Well, if I may, I would check your comfort level, but at this point we have enough planning commissioners that if you chose not to...
I'll sit this one out.
So we can also ask the audience if there's any objection.
Oh, good.
Is there anyone in the audience objecting to Commissioner Roblin being involved in this public hearing while owning property in the affected area? No objections? Commissioners, any objections or concerns?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so this item.
Our last meeting, 23rd of January, staff had presented a recommendation to reduce side yard setbacks to 5 feet with a total of 15 feet on both sides for all buildings in the mixed-use zones. And that was the meeting that I had to miss, but the commission discussed applying that rule in this so as to allow a 5-foot side yard setback minimum inside for single-family residences only. And actually, I thought that was a pretty reasonable idea. So what we're bringing forth tonight is a proposal to change the side yard setbacks for single-family residences in both mixed-use districts, with some changes to the zoning code that confirms the five-foot figure, and also explicitly excludes, defines it does not apply to commercial, mixed-use, and multifamily structures, basically all other structures, even the mixed-use zones. So this was put forth primarily as a incentive or a more flexibility for single-family residences. The original thought was that it might also encourage some commercial development, which, though in some cases could lead to some conflict if there's not enough separation between residential and commercial. So I'm good with the idea of giving single-family residences some flexibility. And I should add, just for the record, that for both this code amendment and the airport code amendment, we did do a quick analysis of its compliance with the comprehensive plan, with the Growth Management Act, and with environmental review. Now on this one, since we do not have a clear decision from the commission, we have not yet done the SEPA determination, and that will be done following this meeting. We'll send it out before it goes to council and run it through the a determination of significance. In this case, I'm assuming it would be a determination of non-significance with the code and file a notice with the Commerce Department. That is yet to be done. Be happy to take any questions about this.
Great. Thank you. Well, I will add a little, if I may, background on this. This was brought a couple of weeks ago, as you said, when you weren't here, and it was brought up by staff that there's recent changes that we have made along Main Street, and which included creating some verbiage for setbacks as we were creating kind of some new zones for these areas. We ended up changing the required setbacks for single-family residences, which previously had a 5-foot minimum setback for side yards, and we changed that to, I think it was 15 total. However, they want a 5-foot minimum but 15 total, so that required a greater setback. And there were some people that objected to that, and through just general discussion, the planning commissioners felt that allowing single-family residences only to go back to that 5-foot side yard setback was not in conflict with what we were trying to accomplish along Main Street. So that's just to give you a little background, commissioners. Is there anybody with any other comments on that before we proceed, or any questions for staff on this?
Question. Is that where, Paul being a member, is that where the council was talking about not wanting to allow for parking between the street and the structure, and because the buildings faced a certain direction, so that's why they had gone to the 5-yard, so that it would not allow parking on the street side, but make was that the discussion? How this ended up that way?
That was regarding the front yard setback, which was originally at, was it 10 feet originally?
Yeah.
I think the front yard setback, and that was changed to a minimum of 5 and a maximum of 20. I think the front yard setback may have been 0.
It was.
Council wanted to have some minimal setback. Since this is not a Main Street downtown, it's more of a secondary zone of Main Street, so that there would be a minimum 5-foot setback, but no more than 20, a maximum of 20, which would prevent front yard parking. So we're still bringing the buildings forward, but they would not be polluted by parking in the front yard.
So does this affect that desired intention at all?
This proposal for side yard setback? No, one, because it's for single-family residential, and the front yard setback for single-family residential is the same, 5 and 20.
Of course, most of those single-family homes are existing and are in excess of that minimum required length of yard. But I don't think it would hinder in any way a lot of single-family homes. If I decided I want to add a front porch, for example, it's typically going to be set back from the street, and I can add a porch without violating that 5-foot minimum setback. So I don't see any unintended consequences from this.
That's, I just didn't want to be undoing something that has already been discussed extensively and took a long time to get to a decision, and then we're starting that all over. And then did the city bring this idea forward just from looking at the map, or were there people applying for permits that weren't able to do what they wanted to do?
We had a couple of cases where there were some issues with having to meet the 10-foot side yard, and then trying to do an accessory building, a garage, a carport, or some such thing, or perhaps even an addition that was causing some heartache to the owners.
So it was impacting the residents?
Right. So we took the initiative to address that, to favor the single-family residences, which was, there was some movement, I think, through commission and council as well, to give single-family homes a break so that they have more reason to stay and not necessarily be converted or redeveloped as commercial, so that we have a true mix.
That's all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dave?
First off, and I'm not sure who the credit goes to, but thank you for getting us the access to Monroe Municipal Code on these laptops. Because I know that 2 weeks ago we didn't have them. So, I think. Anyway, thank you for that. In these two zones that we're talking about, you can't build a new single-family residence anymore. And I was thinking that it was only the our two zones are called again, the mixed-use neighborhood zone and the mixed-use commercial zone, is it? Yeah, mixed-use commercial and mixed-use neighborhood. And my recollection was that the mixed-use commercial didn't allow any new construction of single-family residents, but for some reason I was thinking that the mixed-use neighborhood center did. And again, my recollection could be off on that. Does the language that's being proposed here matter, and that it will only be applied to structures that are already existing?
Well, it would apply if you're trying to do an expansion or accessory building.
So if some
existing residence.
So if someone had an existing residence and happened to have a 12-foot setback, they could add on to that to go into that lesser setback, is what we're saying.
Correct.
Or if they wanted to put up a garage or a detached accessory building.
Right, that would have violated the 10-foot requirement because they didn't have enough side yard depth to place that structure.
Okay.
And I think you guys, as I recall, new single-family construction is not allowed, not a permitted use. We did a lot of work to protect the ability to replace, rebuild, restore existing homes.
Yes.
Or if one burns to the ground, the property has the right to build it back in the same footprint, original footprint.
Well, I mean, thank you for mentioning that, because this actually would allow them, and that footnote that addresses that is footnote number, it's in the language in the code. Mm-hmm. It talks about it being a conforming use, in fact, and if it were destroyed, it could be replaced within the original footprint. But in light of this amendment, it could actually be not only in the original footprint, but expanded, could it not?
The code was fairly explicit about giving the right to replace it basically in its original form
and footprint
in
existing footprint, basic objective being to be able to replace the house, but not to necessarily encourage a tear down and putting up a house twice the size. So it's really about we're not trying to promote new construction of single family detached. We're trying to preserve what's there. So I think in this case, if my home burned to the ground, I could not exceed, at least within reason, that original footprint.
And what I want to make sure we don't set up a conflict here, create a conflict. Because when I look at the language, the footnote number one in the ordinance talks about existing single-family dwellings were destroyed, maybe rebuilt within the building footprint as it existed immediately prior to destruction. And yet we're talking about this 5-foot setback and providing for if someone wants to take their existing single-family home and put an addition on it, that won't be disallowed. They could do that, and they could in fact go down to a 5-foot setback, if I'm following you correctly.
No, I think if there was a case where the house burned to the ground, this is some fairly fine tuning, but if I came back with a proposal to build within the original footprint plus some excess amount, I don't know that that would necessarily be prohibited since the basic use was originally there. And so it's grandfathered in that sense, but yes, it's a very fine split as to whether I could put on a 5-foot addition as long as I was still within that setback.
It would seem silly, yeah, to make somebody rebuild their home within the original footprint and then have them come in again and say, you know, we want to put another 5 feet off the house. So I think that certainly, maybe I don't know those specifically getting that, but maybe in the footnote, it could say, and possible expansion into the up to the 5-foot setback.
I'll jump in. One thing we gotta, I guess, do is go to public. And so I think we're looking for clarification, and definitely I think this will become probably a discussion. But I understand we need some clarification, and if I will, just as a reminder, from what I understood from Brad during that original meeting was that prior to us making these changes to the code, single-family residents had a 5-foot side setback. And even I think after this code, if they put, you know, a burning home aside, if they wanted to expand, they could go to 5 foot on one side as long as they still had 10 feet on the other. This just allows them, if they say, you know, I already have 5 feet because that's where my house was built, but I want to put a garage, and so I'd have to have it 10 feet. Well, that makes my garage too small. I'd want to go to 5 feet so I can fit my car in there. I think that's kind of what generated this. So I just, as a, I guess, a reminder, they're requesting that it go back to what it was prior to this redesignation. And I think as far as building the homes, I like the verbiage. I think it's pretty clear, but we can discuss that, Dave.
Well, and I appreciate your desire to move into the public testimony portion of this hearing. But at the same time, I think that some clarification going into the public testimony portion may be helpful. And with regard to your section about, or comment about remodeling an existing house, you could build a brand new house in the zones.
A single family?
Yes, residential is allowed, yes.
In both of them?
Certainly in the mixed-use neighborhood commercial, you could build a new house.
Oh, you're talking about it previous?
Previous, yes.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And I can.
So, no, I don't want to cut off the discussion if we're not quite clear yet on what I guess the intent of this is, and maybe there'll be some modifications we can discuss. David?
Maybe, Paul, then you can answer me one question. I'll stop for now. If someone wants to remodel and add on to their existing single-family home in either one of these zones, can they do it?
You know what?
before I answer that, I need to check the non-conforming code language.
But we've identified them as being a conforming use by the footnote, the RE, in the RCW.
Legally conforming use. Legally non-conforming use.
Correct. Says right here in footnote number one, existing single-family dwellings are considered allowed legally conforming uses. And that was done, as you said earlier, to make sure that they were protected in the event of something happening to them. Otherwise, one would be able to finance a single-family home if it's a non-conforming use in a commercial-type district. So, really important language.
So, if a legally conforming home burns to the ground, it can be built within its original footprint, but with that statement, it does not prevent expansion, since it is a, what has been known as a legally conforming use. And we had quite a lot of discussion about this, and we went around in circles on this, trying to make sense of it. There's almost a conflict between the statement that an existing home, existing single-family residences are legal conforming uses, existing. And there's another footnote that says that if an existing home is destroyed, it must be built back within its original footprint.
As only that footprint.
The first one trumps the second one. Or vice versa.
There's a conflict.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Any other questions before we open up to public testimony? Thank you. Then I will open this up to public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to make any comments on this? I guess it's a zoning code change here in the audience tonight? No. With that, I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Commissioner, discussion?
If it's not yet essential that this be finished off tonight, or is it possible we could delay it and tweak these issues, address these issues, and come back with it? It sounds like this is starting to get a little more involved than we might be able to handle here and now.
We certainly could. The side yard is not on the same deadline track as the airport compatibility in terms of trying to meet an ordinance deadline. So we could, I was going to suggest that we take a look at this, the staff take a look at this and clarify what seem to be conflicting footnotes. And we can certainly do that, and it might be best to clue us to bring it back to the commission and at that point forward it on.
There's nobody out there waiting for a dispensation on a permit contingent upon something we're doing tonight?
Not that far along, no. I have at least one that's waiting for results to put in an application. So nothing imminent.
Presumably in another 2 weeks at our next meeting, we would have this tweaked a little more and then a little more resolution upon the future.
We can do that.
So just to make sure, if this hadn't come before us, it sounds like we have a conflict. But just so I understand that, if we were to take no action on that other line item, the other footnote only change this, it would still be allowed as it was, say, currently, to appears to allow someone who has a single-family residence, which we are wanting to protect, yet not propagate more of them, I guess you could say.
Correct.
They would be allowed to expand. It's just that they would run into a little different set of side setbacks at this point than if we make this change. So they could remodel their house or expand their house, and then if it burns to the ground, they can go back to what it was remodeled to, or expanded to. And after they, if their home was to burn down, after that, they could expand it again, I guess, at a later time. I'm not quite sure why they couldn't do it at the same time, but...
It's really two different scenarios that are conflicting. One is yes. When you have an existing home and you simply want to add on. The other is when your home is destroyed, you're right. Putting it back. So it's really two different situations.
Right. So I guess we need to fix the conflict. If I may, I'd like to ask the commissioners what their opinion is on this particular possibility of, since the initial intent, from what I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we wanted to be able to preserve single-family residents, mainly because of homeowners insurance issues. If they were in a non-conforming use, I think a lot of times they can't refinance their house. And so we wanted to be able to protect them to refinance their home. And in doing so, we put that footnote about if it's burned to the ground or something happens to it, it can be rebuilt and it would not be non-conforming. But this now we're seeing could allow someone to expand their single-family residence, which was something I'd never considered. Commissioners, any opinions on that?
I remember in our council discussion that was a concern, and the intent of doing the rezone was so that new, and Brad, I don't know if it's going to stay, but always passing through, no big goods or anything. Because one of the council members, I don't remember the thing about the house burning to the ground being in there before. I remember one of the council members bringing that up and saying, we're saying that you can't build new single-family residences in this area, but what if someone lost their house or had something catastrophic happen? And so that was kind of put in as an emergency escape clause, not necessarily to limit or propagate anything. It just was if I understood it right, we want that to become a certain type of district, so we'd like the single family residences to fade out, but by choice, not because someone has their house burned down and then now they can't rebuild and that's their home. That was the point. So it doesn't seem like it would be hard to make the language consistent with the intentions, but somebody sat down and Paul kind of hammered that out.
If I may, Bill, any...
No, I remember the same thing she remembers. I was at that meeting that night, and that was what I remember also, as they were trying to clarify that the person that had their house burned down wasn't out of luck, so to speak. So...
Yeah, in fact, I thought it was something Dave brought up.
I do?
Yeah, in our meetings. Jeff?
If you rebuild a destroyed home, you're recreating a functional longevity. So whether it's the size it was before or somewhat bigger, I think that the time that structure would last in regards to this becoming a different use over time would not change. So it would seem a bit dysfunctional to me if someone came back and let's say they had a 1,200 square foot home, and they said, I'm going to build a 2,000 square foot home. And that takes me up to my 5 feet. That they should be able to do that as one process rather than having to build a 1,200 square foot home and then come back in and say, we only had 800 square feet home to it. That seems a bit dysfunctional to put someone through that process.
So are you, if I may, open to people even currently expanding their homes in this zone then?
I agree, yes.
Yeah, okay. Dave?
Commissioner Tuttle's absolutely right. That was an important issue of council, but it was an issue, as you said, that I brought up. I think that for us to have created non-conforming uses out of all the single-family residents on Main Street would have been a huge disservice to the community and those homeowners. Because not only you mentioned refinancing insurance, but you can't finance a house if it's non-conforming as a residential loan. And so that is hugely important. At the same time, I think it's important that if we catch what may be an inconsistency or conflict in the code here, it's better than having staff catch it with an applicant at the front desk. And if we can remedy that in some way, I think that's important. I'm with Commissioner Shula. I would not be opposed to someone with a 1,200 square foot house in Bernanson. I want to have them come back and say, I want to expand to 1,500 feet. I mean, my real criteria is, was it being used or is it being used as a conforming residential property? And if they want to come in and modify that somewhat, you know, I don't know that we should get so hung up on the fact it's going to be 200 square feet bigger or have an attached garage. So I think, Paul, there are just some questions here that we could benefit from clarifying. And speaking of Kevin, on the attachment two, you referencing the limited open space airport chapter on the title of this page versus the 1860 is the airport overlay. The top of page, this page, attachment two, your standards, both standards.
Oh,
yeah. So just for catching now rather than later.
Thank you.
So I would certainly be supportive going back, doing a little bit of homework and bringing this back to us in our next regularly scheduled meeting, and I would certainly support the continuation of the public hearing until that time.
Thank you, Dave. Bridget?
And could I say, maybe some of the language could be attached to a catastrophic event for the footnote rather than just any old... That we look at a catastrophic event to a home a little differently than we do everything else, and sometimes that helps provide the infrastructure for making decisions when people do come in for wanting to rebuild after something catastrophic may happen.
Thank you.
Not making it too facetious, making it saying, here's what happened, your house burned down, we're gonna look at it a little differently than we do.
Right, and we should be, between the two.
Yeah.
Okay. Wayne?
No comments.
So are you, okay with just allowing someone to add on to their own brand? And
yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can go either way with that. I think if we were to say that we didn't want them to extend their home, we should at least allow them to build sheds and garages. And if we are going to reword this to allow them to expand, especially if something happens to destroy their home, I personally don't have a problem going back to a 5-foot setback. That's what it was before I made this change. Because if it does get changed to a different use, which was our eventual intent over time, then that would change the setbacks for that new use. So that's why I'm just going to...
Dave? Paul, I want to make a quick clarification. Yes, on the side yard setback, assuming we end up with 5 feet, is there any need to address second and possibly third stories on a single-family residence? Or is that 5 foot applicable to all stories?
I started out... requiring a 10-foot setback for a two-story house. But, I think it would be fine to, if a building owner wants to build two stories, and we want to see three, even in the case of a three-story or two-and-a-half-story, if that owner is fine with it being that close to the property line and the adjacent property, whatever that separation might be, That's a call of the owner. I think it might be overly complicating things to say 5 foot for one story, 10 foot for a second story, or 10 foot for a two-story. My thing is it'd be, I think, best just
call for 5-foot minimum. There is a additional setback for 4th and 5th story, which of course is a multifamily building. But that would not affect single family, or apply to single family.
Thank you.
If you get these houses too close together, like I had this storm issue when I lived over there, fire code probably should be something changed there, because above distance, you're going to have a couple houses on fire, and you may have to put a fire alarm or something. I don't know how you can go about doing that with a fire code.
As I recall, a fire code calls for a minimum of 5 feet. If you're less than five, it's you get into 1 hour protection and I think limited openings and that sort of thing. But I believe at five to the property line, that there are no extraordinary requirements for things like fire protection.
If I may on that, at this point, not allowing new construction of single-family residential homes. It would only be additions to existing homes, and they would have to conform to the latest codes as far as, I don't know, correct. I'm not involved with residential much, but do they have to build blocking, those kind of things, and exterior walls of homes currently?
Sure.
Well, even if they, I don't know if it matters, but they would have to conform to the current codes.
They would.
But any addition.
Correct.
At this point, otherwise they're already at 10 feet away from each other if they're in that position now, so. If there's any other comments? So if I understand correctly, we still have an open public hearing, yet there is a desire to continue the public hearing to a future date. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct.
So I guess we would need to make a motion to continue the public hearing on a date.
Could I suggest that we carry it to our next meeting, which would be February 27th?
I'd be happy to make that motion. Make a motion with the public hearing, ZCA 2012-03, mixed-use side yard setbacks, be continued to February 27th, and at such time as the commission desires, a public testimony may be reopened, which I think is allowable.
Yes.
For further deliberation and action on this item.
Excellent. Second.
Great. Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Good. All right, now we have a workshop, ZCA 2012-05, Roosevelt Ridge Pre-Annexation Zoning, also by Planning Manager Kupacka.
Okay, this is a 183 acres north of the city. We're all familiar with this. But our charge tonight, the objective, this is the first of a couple of meetings where we can talk about this, is to recommend a pre-annexation zoning for this property. A little bit of history. This is an annexation that was initiated by a property owner. I don't recall how many acres, a couple of undeveloped parcels in the Roosevelt Ridge area. I believe up in that northeast area of the annexation area. And the decision was made to then take that request and expand it to include what's shown on this map as a Roosevelt Ridge area in support of this future annexation map that defined, I believe it's zone, can't quite remember, is that 8? The the beige area north of the highway.
Makes five, six.
Six. Area six. So that initial request really essentially was, became the Roosevelt Road rezoning number six in the future annexation map, that five-year strategy that was developed several years ago. So at this point, you know, state law authorizes the city to assign it a pre-annexation zoning. That zone designation would become effective when and if the property is actually annexed. And this is going to be processed by way of election in November. It's the first time, I think, in Monroe that it has been done as the election option. There are about three options on how you can annex property. So the charge of the commission is to recommend the equivalent zoning to match the comprehensive plan and land use designation, which it now has. It's within the urban growth area, designated as residential 2 to 5 dwelling units per acre in the comp plan. So the equivalent zoning that would need to be assigned this would be urban residential 9600, which is about a little under 5 lots per acre, theoretically, at least, to fit that category. That's basically a mandate from the state law. Now, there are issues, we started talking about this, I think, previously, in relation to Roosevelt Road. There are issues with access, potential traffic impacts. There is sewer available farther south, and the question of whether that sewer could potentially be extended to Roosevelt Road, you'd have to cross the highway bypass area. Same with water that's served by Roosevelt Water District at this point, and whether that would be taken up by the city water service, or whether there could be some potential for leaving it in the hands of the Roosevelt Water District and the city eventually supplying sewer to that area. But our charge tonight, it's a little bit of a horse and barn situation again with the potential impacts of this, especially in terms of traffic and concurrency with utility services. But as a citizen-initiated annexation on track toward election, we do need to make some movement to do this pre-annexation zoning and push this ahead to the election, where the property owners, I'm sorry, not the property owners, what I understand is that the residents of this annexation area will vote. Unless I'm mistaken, if I rent a house in that area as a tenant, I can, with my residents in that, on that piece of property, I can vote for or against annexation.
I don't think that's right.
That's what I was came to understand. That's what I was told, that it is by the and I, you know, I'm not totally clear on that, because I would think it would be property owners, but and I haven't had a chance to confirm that, but at this point, my understanding is residents, registered voters. I got a little bit more research to do on this. We do have this, we want to bring this back again to the next meeting, but there is a timetable involved. If you start in November at the general election and work your way back through all the steps, including public hearings and notices and so forth, we don't have much time to before we need to forward a recommendation.
Paul, if fire I think you mentioned it, the land use designation has already been changed for this area recently, within the last couple of years, and zoning has not changed yet for this area. So that's another part of this, is we need to basically be in conformance with that, because we'd have currently a conflict between the comprehensive plan designation and the current zoning that we have on it. So that's one thing that needs to be addressed, and you're saying that because this is coming up for election, we have to be sure to deal with this by July 1st. And I have a question. Does, I guess if it doesn't get annexed, if it doesn't pass, it just doesn't get annexed, but it doesn't really affect our zoning. We just have to change the zoning for when it is annexed, is that correct?
That's right. If it's not annexed, then it would revert to the, or stay with under the current county zoning. The city zoning would not apply since it's not within city limits.
But it would be already set for when it does eventually get annexed, then we wouldn't have to go through this process again. It would just be an annexation.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
It was designated in the comp plan since it is in within the urban growth area. But until such time it's annexed, there's no zoning action.
Oh, I see.
But this is, like I say, a pre-annexation zoning that's authorized by the state.
So if it doesn't pass the vote, does this pre-annexation zoning somehow get removed, or does it just stay there until it's finally annexed?
It's moot. It does not apply.
And so if it gets back to where it was going to get attempted to be annexed again, would we have to go through this process again, or would what we're doing here still hold, even though it's not applied because it's not part of the city?
I don't know the answer to that one. If that pre-annexation zoning would go with the land and not the initiative pre-annexation,
okay.
I can find out. I'd be curious to know.
Jeff?
I have the county zoning map. Almost all of the area proposed is R7200 by the county right now. But a little bit in the southeast corner is 9600. Just so you know. Which is odd.
Well, I think there's a, I think regardless of the zoning, if I remember correctly, because there is no sewer service, these homes that are currently on there and any future homes that would be built, if there is no service, has to be built at, what is it, a half acre or a quarter acre or something like that?
Yeah, that's why they did the cluster up there, so the lots would be large enough to support on-site septic systems.
That's right. So even though there's a zoning for a higher density,
you can't achieve it without sanitary sewer.
Right, that's right. Thank you. Commissioners, any other questions? Comments, Dave?
Paul, is this kind of just one of those rubber stamp sort of things where we just say, yeah, okay, we zone it? Or is there the opportunity on the city's part to condition that rezone in any way to address issues such as access, which in my mind is a huge concern for this area?
I don't believe that we would be able to exercise any conditional zoning at this point or any other point on this. And I ask myself the same question. And in this case, it's a citizen-initiated annexation that deserves some kind of zoning designation. But I think the potentially good side of that move is that if this is annexed, the city, not the county, would control future development. It would be under city regulations rather than county regulations, as opposed to leaving the land unannex and letting it, and assuming that there would be some development activity that would be a continuation of county regulations. Now, whether this is, how the issues of traffic and services are addressed is, I think, going to be similar to the Roosevelt Road rezoned property across the bypass, in that any subdivision that's going to happen up here is going to have to go through a CEPA process, which is going to trigger some kind of recognition of impacts and potential mitigation. What it really begs the question of whether those things can be mitigated and how can they be mitigated. but it's almost another process where development may not be able to happen, even though it's potentially is entitled, without defining those impacts and getting the mitigations into, for example, the transportation improvement plan that we have with the Roosevelt Road rezoning, where we're delaying that in order to update the comprehensive plan and be able to solve those, at least to try to address those issues when they come up. This is, I guess, a similar case. Roosevelt Road is entitled at a certain level of zoning. Same for this one. So I don't know that there's much that we can do in terms of trying to put this off or delay it or condition it, since it's a initiated annexation. I don't know that we have the power to stop that or any reason to stop that at this point. But there are potential future consequences.
Certainly, in my mind, Roosevelt Road was a request for an upzone.
Correct.
And we had the ability to say no to that, or at least recommend a no to that.
Right. And we're going to talk about that in the last piece of our agenda here.
And I think that on this property, the council did take away the opportunity. The council opened the door for the annexation request, if I recall.
Absolutely did.
And my concern, of course, is, and I don't know whether you've driven up there or not, Paul, with this on coming on the agenda, but certainly the access from Robin Hood Lane, just north of the bypass right away there, to this property is all narrow, county roads with no shoulders or sidewalks, and if I recall correctly, while impacts can be mitigated through concurrency, which says it will be done within 6 years of the impact, if it's defined in our transportation plan, there's nothing to say that this property couldn't get developed with nothing being done to those small county roads that are not a part of the development itself. In other words, what's between the development and the good access wouldn't have to be touched. And, you know, if we have, it sounds like it's really a procedural item. We just need to act on it. And there's really not a whole lot of room for discussion, but I wish that there was some way of addressing those concerns in a way to, you know, protect, you know, in the best interest of public safety and health and welfare. It just, this area makes me really nervous when it comes to transportation. So
I think the process was set in motion when this map was developed with the future annexation areas as a, I guess, what do I want to call it, a recognition or a definite action to say, yes, we wish to annex these areas as a matter of policy. And when this initiation comes up, it's almost like the zoning to comp plan relationship. If the request to initiate annexation, in my mind, is supported by this annexation strategy, then that should go forward in terms of this, the policy request. And even knowing that there are going to be some issues with access. I have driven up through there. I wasn't overly concerned with Robert Hood Lane. It's, you know, it kind of reminded me of Chain Lake in some ways, but going off of some of those side streets, I agree that the access, once you get off of that Robin Hood, I'll call it a collector, access is much more limited, much tougher. And, you know, what kind of property might develop out there, how much of that land truly is developable, and what's the net build-out that's possible? Haven't even looked at that possibility to see just how much of an impact it might be. I think that the northeast corner is probably developable. I'm not sure about the area north of the bypass, what kind of existing conditions there are there. But it may trigger some form of off-site improvements, which could include potentially improvements to the east-west roads. But at this point, who knows what might be feasible or could even be potentially required of a developer up there to have that nexus, that connection, that if I do this, this happens, therefore I have to fix it.
And I think that schedule is actually, from what I thought I had heard was kind of from pressure from the county. But Jeff, you had
to... Well, why is this in front of us right now?
For pre-annexation zoning, the directive being to assign it a classification prior to annexation, so that it is...
So did Equibarger come in and make a request?
Pardon?
Did Equibarger come in and make a request? Or anybody else?
I'm not sure about the name of the party that requested the original request. This would have been back in, early last year, or in 2010? I believe it was 2010.
But I'm not sure why we're looking at it. Did the council direct us to look at this, or is there an application that resulted?
It's a preemptive move just to ensure that if the annexation is successful through the election in November, there's zoning that goes along with the property once it's part of the city.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's an initial direction from council back in April.
Okay.
That of their intent, the council declared their intent to annex this or to recognize the application or the initiative from the citizens.
It looks like it'll probably support about 300 or 400 additional units based on the acreage and the densities we're talking about, so that's the context, I guess.
The question I have, actually I have several on all of this. I mean, it does feel like a rubber stamp, but yet we usually don't treat things that way, so... a couple things. One is, there is no sewer up there, so I have multiple questions. One is, if there is no sewer, does the Monroe Municipal Code have a have language similar to the county that you build lots at a larger scale lot, which reduces the density in order to put in septic? And if I remember correctly, I think our code also requires that if you have an existing septic, which many of these homes are new, but not all of them in here are, and it fails, I believe you're required to hook up to city sewer, and city sewer, from what I also understand, does not cross the DOT property because the cost of doing so is so prohibitive to anybody actually deciding to do it that it hasn't happened yet, from what I understand. So if an older home that's within this has septic and it fails, and they are now within our city, if that happens, are they going to be required to pay for that to go through? And Dave, it sounds like you probably have some
personal experience. If you're within 300 feet of sewer, you shall hook up 200, Tim?
Oh.
200 feet, I stand corrected, unless you can prove a financial hardship and convince the council of it.
So if they're beyond 200 feet, then it appears as though they are not going to be required to hook up to sewer.
You deal with the Snohomish Health District.
Excellent. Thank you for clarifying.
I think the right-of-way is about 200 feet, so... That kind of covers everybody up there.
Good.
All right.
Wayne?
The sewer system does go underneath the bypass property on the...
Jerry Mike Road.
In the road.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen the sewer map lately, so I don't know how far it is from those folks.
Oh, it's far.
It'd be a long ways.
Yeah. So I guess the question I still have, though, is... You know, if they decided to develop, are there roadblocks that since there's no sewer there, would they not be allowed to develop until they brought sewer, or would they be allowed to develop at a lower density so they could put in septic? And that's what I'm not sure of, and maybe peruse the code, I would find that answer, but that's just a curiosity I have on that. If anybody knows the answer. Feel free to chime in.
I know there's a relationship between city water and city sewer. That if you have, I think the rules for septics are much more lenient if you're on city water system.
Which this area is
that not going to have conflict between wells and septics on the same small piece, or the same size piece of property, smaller piece of property.
Dave?
Oh, I found your answer on the election. And that is, an annexation election shall be held in accordance with the general election laws of the state. Only registered voters who have resided in the area proposed to be annexed for 90 days immediately preceding the election shall be allowed to vote there. So wouldn't that say that the vacant landowners, if they don't live in the area, they don't get to vote? In
interesting. Would you read that again?
Sure. It's RCW 35.13.070. An annexation election should be held in accordance with the general election laws of the state, and only registered voters who have resided in the area must be annexed for 90 days immediately preceding the election should be allowed to vote therein.
I would read that as being if I don't live there, reside there, I don't vote.
Even if I own 3/4 of the property.
Right. Seems odd that rules for voting for annexation are different from rules for tax-related or improvement district-related measures that require property owners. They may make some combination of assessed value and number of owners.
Interesting.
Right. Shouldn't we wait for the vote before we do any zoning changes?
Well, the directive is to give it that pre-annexation so that if it is annexed, it is simultaneously automatically zoned. Otherwise, if I'm not mistaken, if there is no designated zoning, it comes in agricultural.
Because I guess what I haven't experienced yet is we have a situation that is the land use designation is different than the zoning. We were able to change the comprehensive plan, but we haven't really addressed the zoning until now. And so if this was a city initiated organization, like, would we go through the same process or would we wait until it's annexed and then do it? I mean, I don't remember rezoning an area that was not annexed.
I think the logic behind an action of this sort is that the people who have the voice there and can vote need to know, are we going to be building apartments up here? Are we going to be putting an airport up here? Are we going to be putting 4 houses per acre up here? So that they have some context or framework in which to cast their vote. I think that's the intent here.
Gotcha. Because I guess my question again on that would be, it has been, I guess, I'm guessing a year to a year and a half since this land use designation was changed. And we're dealing with the rezone now, and we're calling it a pre-annexation rezone, but I would have thought we would have just done the rezone anyway, to be honest with you. But,
well, we're not until it was annexed. Not until it was annexed.
We do the rezone. So in these cases, I guess where I'm going is most of the time when we change the comprehensive plan, we then change the zoning so that they're in agreement.
Right.
And in an annexation, I'm kind of coming to the conclusion that maybe if it's in the, I want to say GMU. In the UGA, I guess we don't have to conform to that requirement to bring them into consistency, the comprehensive plan and the zoning. And again, this is probably, I'm delving into something that's really a point, I guess.
They do have to be consistent when the property is, if and when the property is annexed.
Okay.
There may be some, some way of saying, of delaying, and it's designated, say, R2-5 land use. I suppose it may be possible to annex the property. It would automatically be zoned something, mm-hmm. and then there would have to be a separate action after that to match the zoning to the comp plan designation. So this tries to avoid that disconnect if it is annexed. And if not, as we discussed, then this is all for nothing because the zoning does not apply.
Right.
Gotcha.
So okay. Not city limits.
I believe that if I knew why after many years I'm not being on the council, to annex a piece of property, you have to be denser than what the county is before you can annex it. So, I don't know if it's still that way.
Well, from what I know, when you do annex, when the city annexes, we have to designate that the equivalent of what we have in the comp plan, which may not be in agreement with what the county is, with what the county zoning is. Chances are, our land is going to call for a higher density.
Right.
If we need a higher density zoning, when it came into the city.
It used to be that the county wouldn't let you annex if you had the same zoning.
Hmm. Do you know if the county really has any authority?
Yeah, we used to
do that.
It used to be that way, you know. We used to have to go down to the county and get approval.
Wayne, I think you're harking back to the days of the Boundary Review Board.
Oh, yes.
And its role in annexations.
Well, I think, as Commissioner Sherwood pointed out, I think there's even some higher density. If I understood what you said on the county in some areas, then there will be one more building.
Yeah, 72 is usually 5 to 6 per acre, more normally 5 because, you know, streets and drainage and all that, realistically. If we go to a maximum of 4 and we're already at 5, that would be an issue, but I don't think it's applicable.
It's not applicable because this city doesn't allow the extension of sewers outside of city limits. There are other cities that do, and they can't even allow for higher levels of development in some areas when they get those city services.
Right.
I'm not sure, other than a recommendation to move forward with this, what role we have here. I mean, that really is the question, isn't it? We just need to go to public hearing, hold a public hearing on a possible recommendation to council on an open zoning classification for this in UR 9600.
No, we actually don't even have a public hearing at the commission. There are two required public hearings with city council.
Oh.
But not at the commission.
So
they're required public hearings under the legislative body, the council.
So when we're done here, do we just make a recommendation on what to do, I guess, and then they will, and even though we don't hold the public hearing on it, and they will hold their public hearings and make their decision?
Well, we can try and address some of the questions that came up at our next meeting, if you're so inclined, or we can certainly move ahead with a recommendation tonight to designate the UR 9600 as the equivalent, as the pre-annexation zone, equivalent to the existing comp plan design.
So at some point the city council is looking for a recommendation from the planning
yes.
commission, even though we won't be really holding any public hearing.
Correct. Correct. And I had slotted this twice so we could discuss it tonight, and the things to talk about to try and clarify things. We can come back at the next meeting and take some action.
Right. Commissioners, we've done a pretty good job of picking this thing apart. It's very common for us to invite the public to make any comments if they have any, even in a workshop like this. Is there any objections to opening it up to comments from the public? Is there anyone in the audience wanting to make any comments regarding this?
Well, I'm a resident, but...
Well, if I could have you real quick, just give your name and address for the record, please.
Erin Sullivan.
And would you mind coming up by the podium so we can hear you on the recording? Thank you.
Erin Sullivan, 7500 83rd Avenue, Southeast, 98290. We're planning, out of planning class, that's why we're here.
Oh,
but I agree with Commissioner Sherwood that as a resident of that area, I would appreciate an opportunity to know what I was voting for, if I was voting for what kind of density that's in. That's the only comment I have.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wanting to make any comments? All right, thank you. Commissioners, anything else?
I guess we're finally done with that one.
Yeah, I'm very curious about your question about does a pre-annexation zoning designated by this commission stay with the, and by council, does it stay with the intact if it's not annexed and comes back a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever?
Great, and then so we're going to see this again one more time before we make a recommendation?
27th.
Great. All right, well now our last workshop of the evening is RZ 2011-01 Road. Roosevelt Road rezone. Town manager Popelka also has this one.
Yeah, this, you'll recall, we had a discussion of this at the joint meeting with council on February 7th. Commission's position being that this should be delayed or somehow dealt with because there are so many unsolvable issues with, primarily with traffic and the environmental impacts. And during that discussion with council, it seemed like we all reached consensus, commission and council, that the solution would be to vote to delay this rezoning until such time as we update the 2015 comprehensive plan, which would allow us to those mitigation requirements like improvements to Highway 2 and Roosevelt Road into the transportation plan, into the transportation improvement plan, because right now it's not even in that plan at all. On the basis that, yes, the zoning is supposed to be consistent with the comprehensive plan, and right now they're not consistent, but there is no specific time requirement. How long do you have to make them consistent? And the general feeling around here is that since we are not simply delaying it and ignoring it, hoping it will go away, we are delaying it under the premise that we're updating our plans to address the potential impacts. So therefore, there is a reason for the delay should there ever be some kind of an inquiry or complaint about that lack of consistency. So,
so if I incorrectly said,
go ahead. So I think we reached an agreement that night, at least philosophically, that the council seemed to agree that yes, let's delay this on that basis of updating the comp plan. And frankly, this is not would not be my first choice for trying to address redevelopment or further development to work toward that target growth of number of households required in the next 20 years, since so much of it is undevelopable. And it may come back to the option we discussed at our last meeting or a couple weeks ago about reverting the comp plan designation back to what it used to be at 2 to 5 instead of 5 to 7 per acre. But for now, our suggested recommendation is to simply delay it, you know, and until we do that, those updates.
Great.
You have better answers.
So it sounds like our official reason for delaying is going to be that we want to wait to see what happens with the new study, not because we got so many other things to deal with. So that makes sense.
In this case,
I don't know if you caught that, but the reason behind our delay is in case anybody...
this case, logic and good sense prevail, and
we're going to delay it because we want to see what the study comes out.
And that would be the housing analysis?
Yes.
And transportation.
And transportation, thank you, yes.
And I think like you talked about, Dave, that updating the land use capacity and targets and so forth. In fact, I mean on March 1st at the Puget Regional Council about the first efforts toward those updates. We will have a more detailed buildable land report late this year, I think.
Oh, wow. Later this year.
Good.
Commissioners, any other comments or questions on this particular line item? So then do we have action that we will take at some point? Or can we forward a recommendation to the council? Do they need to approve this? Or?
Yes.
So we need to forward a recommendation to the council, it looks like at the bottom here, that it be part of the 2015 periodic update to the comprehensive plan?
Does that sound right?
It would be, you know, delay, we're delaying this to allow time to consider this really in simultaneously with the 2015 comp plan update or in conjunction with that 2015 comp plan update, which is actually going to be finished hopefully by the end of 2015.
Right.
We have until June of 2015, but we don't want to go that far.
So you are looking for a recommendation tonight if we're willing to make one?
Yes.
Great. Dave?
And just to clarify again, the reasons for holding off on this are to allow resolution perhaps of any transportation concerns that exist, and development of those concerns, or addressing those concerns in the transportation element of the comprehensive plan, and also allow for time for further analysis of any potential land use capacity shortfalls that might exist, which were really the basis for this annexation or this upzone request in the first place.
Correct.
Correct. Absolutely.
Makes sense to me.
Yep.
Well, I certainly support the motion to make the recommendation to the City Council that this proposed rezone be put on hold pending the items just commented on a moment before and completion of the update to the 2015 update to the Monroe Comprehensive Plan.
So I believe that was a motion?
It was a motion.
Thank you. So motion made by Commissioner Dickman, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. That brings us to discussion by commissioners and staff.
A couple things. I elected to send you ahead of time the report to council for the meeting tomorrow night. That's in your pile of papers there about amending the work program to add the comprehensive plan amendment to the docket for North Kelsey and downtown for working with the revising the language, the regulatory language that's in that comprehensive plan related to the Kelsey and the downtown area based on that meeting that night and the unveiling of the strategies for dealing with North Kelsey. And changing the plan for North Kelsey to changing the plan to take away the requirements that were originally in there for development of a village green and a pedestrian-oriented commercial areas, since there's been so much development and will be so much development with Walmart coming, pretty much obliterates the possibility of implementing that plan. So I don't think it's really an inappropriate idea to modify the objectives for North Kelsey. But then, of course, the strategy is to take the energy and the funding from the proceeds of the sale of that Kelsey property, apply it to downtown, and begin to think much more seriously about improving downtown. But in order to do anything at all, we need to go into the comp plan and remove the regulatory language that shouldn't be there in the first place. The comp plan is a policy document. It's not a place for zoning regulations. And almost by default, the North Kelsey plan and the downtown plan are both referenced and adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. Interestingly enough, it's a hard word, when the city did that with the Shoreline Master Program, the comp plan adopted only certain portions of that shoreline plan, the policy sections. It did not adopt and accepted the regulatory chapters. And that's what should have been done with North Kelsey and downtown. But I wanted to give you a copy of this to see what, that this is going to council tomorrow night. It's revising the docket to allow us to add this North Kelsey downtown comp plan amendment and move ahead with changing the comp plan that way and then changing the Monroe Municipal Code eventually to restructure this North Kelsey and downtown in the context of both the comp plan and the zoning code. So that's coming. And in fact,
On this slide, we can come back to this in a couple of minutes, but talk about other things that are coming up over the next, the next several weeks here. And one of those is this comp plan language, and we have public hearing scheduled tentatively at least for March 12th. Objective being to hold a public hearing very early in this process to see how the public may be reacting to this idea. And then we have three meetings scheduled after that to conduct some workshops and reach some kind of a recommendation by the time we get to that third meeting after the public hearing. And this comp plan docket change, it'll become part of that whole docket of East Monroe, First Air, North Kelsey Downtown, there's one more. The West Monroe project, I think, is not something we're worried about this year quite so much. But it would become a part of that group of comp plan amendments that are going to be all eventually adopted and acted on at one time with council. Commission can forward recommendations different times, I think, but council must act on those all at once.
Dave?
Paul, I'm a little confused. It seems to me we've always typically had workshops on a topic before the public hearing, because at the public hearing is when we make our recommendations. Isn't that true?
Well, it is in some ways at least. I saw this as a means of trying to garner some public input right away. And it's not to say that we can't hold another public hearing. This is a formal public hearing. We can certainly have informal public hearings as we go along, but depending on, I guess, what the outcome is of that first public hearing or what kind of interest there is out there, we may even choose to hold a second formal public hearing before we take action. But the idea here was to, before we get too deep into this, and it's fairly simple. I mean, the results are fairly dramatic, but the action is fairly simple. It's deleting that reference to North Kelsey Downtown, basically removing them from the comp plan. And we may need to go back and add some language in the comp plan that references the policy directives in those two plans, but nonetheless, it's doing some surgical removal of regulations.
And I would agree with that, Paul. It's really pretty easy. You pick up the subway plan, you find the trash can, and you throw it away. This city spent months and months and months, as did this commission, as did the citizens of this town, putting that plan together, and it was really hard for me to believe that we're going to look at throwing out in a month's time. And that's how I see this. And I don't think that the public is going to be given this sort of time frame, an adequate period of time to get involved and comment on what is a major shift in policy in this city's part. And that really bothers me. Yeah, I got emotional tonight.
Jackie,
if I may, in looking at, I think I must have read this article or something akin to it, and I was contemplating it, and I went back to Steinbeck, the best laid plans of mice and men oft go astray. And we have to deal with the reality, and not necessarily the fantasy. And this is a stark reality we're up against, and I think we have to address it in the most pragmatic manner we possibly can to serve the citizenry. I believe the citizenry has had time, as they've seen what has gone on there, especially with Walmart, and we've seen a community response to that. So I think we have the time within this time frame to address these things, because much time has gone before in which people have already responded from the community, seeing, not sure how many folks actually knew what the vision was there in the first place. So I think the response has been gradual, but there has been a response to the change from what at least the people understood the vision, how it's actually turning out to be.
And I appreciate the concerns, and I appreciate the mayor having presented this in such a way as we need to shift directions a little bit, and we need to look at the emphasis moving perhaps from the North Kelsey area to parts of downtown, and taking some of the things that were desired by the citizens up in that area, and instead doing them in downtown. I think that's great, but my concern is that we're going to rush forward on Part A, that is, get rid of all that stuff, without meaning Part B really even has any potential whatsoever happening. The mayor last week talked about a common area being done downtown. No one's looked at how that would be accomplished. Someone asked me about it the other day. They said, Dave, can the city condemn area private property for public space, public plaza space? And they said to me, I don't think so. The mayor talked about his extension of Hill Street to fix problems, but they didn't even talk to the school district about whether the school district wants to participate in that or not. And again, I'm really apprehensive about throwing out A on a promise of B when B hasn't even been adequately explored. So those are some more of my thoughts.
My feeling, my understanding too from a meeting with Paul Paca before, is that the language that's in there, the North Kelsey plan language should not, it's misplaced where it is, and so what I understand is removing the North Kelsey plan but keeping the design guidelines. Isn't that what you were saying?
Yes, that's right. The North Kelsey plan would be removed, detached from the comp plan.
And why doesn't the North Kelsey plan belong in the comp plan?
Basically, the regulatory language does not belong in the comp plan. The zoning
about shoring up
requirements,
the way it should have been in the first place. I think I gave up on the North Kelsey plan, as did a lot of other people, with the coming of Walmart anyway, and I don't know that the shift in vision that A should be contingent on B. I don't think it was going to happen anyway. For me, it's not been a short notice. It's been at least 2 years of looking at that and realizing that I wish that it would have been stated earlier, before the whole Walmart discussion, that it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do this. And I've already gone through the emotional side of that too, but my understanding isn't that it's really that radical. It's just taking out language that shouldn't be there and rewriting it so that it's the way it's supposed to be. That's my understanding, but.
And I appreciate that, Bridget, but I think it is radical because it does take away the vision. It takes away the policy that says it shall develop in this sort of way. Paul, if I understand, what will be retained will be you shall have design features such as some roof designs, some architectural designs. You shall have red paving. Some of that will be retained. That's the sort of features that will be retained by what's being proposed. Anything else as far as pedestrian-oriented or common space or mixed use in some part of it, that will all be tossed away, from what I understand.
Basically the plan, development plan portions and the development plan concepts would be deleted. The design guidelines, the architectural guidelines would stay intact, but those would need to become part of, and I believe they are now already a part of the zoning code. But they should not, those guidelines should not reside within the comp plan in any case, because they were adopted and referenced in the zoning code as standards. Now there's this disconnect between guidelines and standards. Guidelines are, well, consider painting your sign red. The standard would say, paint your sign red. But as when they're adopted in the zoning code and they're classified as
as regulations, then the staff has the power to, a little more power to exercise some authority over guidelines more so than we would otherwise. But where am I headed here? Okay, so the intent is to keep the guidelines intact, but abandoning the development concept, which at the time, you know, looking back at when I first went through the plan, I thought this is, you know, it's an interesting plan. It's a good plan and a great vision. Although I, as a professional, I had problems trying to understand how Monroe expected realistically to build a vital downtown, the traditional downtown, and also build a hybrid version of downtown in North Kelsey that's both auto-dependent and trying to emphasize some pedestrian amenities in that. They're almost competing interests. We have different styles of, North Kelsey has evolved a totally different style of commercial uses than downtown. I mean, downtown is very heavily pedestrian-friendly. North Kelsey, in spite of the plans, ideas for connecting North Kelsey and downtown and promoting moving back and forth, well, that's not going to happen. With the way North Kelsey has come together, I think it needs to be recognized for what it is. And it's just not what people envisioned back in 2004, 2005, that came together, the North Kelsey plan. Time for a lot different then. And maybe it was possible to make it happen. But really, as soon as Lowe's came in my opinion, that was the first nail in the coffin in terms of that plan. It took away so much of the integrity of that plan, it really, really compromised it. My hope is that this medical office project, 51,000 square feet, and at this point we have no idea how many buildings, how high, but that is can be developed as a pretty intensively pedestrian environment. Park a car and then have a more of a pedestrian campus of buildings. They may choose to build one large X-story building, I don't know. I'm hoping that we can salvage something out of that.
I was just going to say, Paul, look, having sat here back when that plan was adopted, you touched on exactly the reasons why it was done the way it was, and it was to make it more difficult to change. So that you talked about the things that were incorporated into the planning document. It was done with the purpose that, there's a lot of effort and thought that went into this. There should be a lot of thought and effort that goes into undoing it if that's what's going to be done. And by incorporating that language to the degree that was incorporated in that plan, there was a thought that that would help accomplish that. And I think it does.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Jeff, did you have something?
Yeah, just one last thing. I think that, we have to learn a lesson here that when a public project impinges on the private sector's ability to be economical, it is doomed to failure. This was exacerbated by the fact that we went into a very deep recession right around the time that plan was conceived. I think, and this speaks to Dave's request for this ability to look at the socioeconomic characteristics of a given proposal, that if the cost to the private entities is so great of what we're trying to accomplish publicly, then there needs to be a piece of information we consider. That is why we went up to Lowe's and Walmart and not Gucci and Armani in North Kelsey. And these are the realities with which we have to deal. So, ambitious as it was and as good of an idea it may have seemed to be at the time, we always, I think, have to come back to reality in whatever we look at, whether or not it makes sense economically. Otherwise, we won't get participation from the private sector, which is where the money, most of the money, comes from.
Thank you. I think a couple things. one, I guess we'll never know if it would have ever turned out different than it did if the economy hadn't faltered. I see that we have Kelsey and downtown combined, and I understand, you know, what we're trying to achieve with that, and that there's, we want to make some changes to the downtown master plan. Hopefully not changes as far as any of the details, but moving, if you will, some of the regulation from the comp plan to the zoning. But two things. One is, I can appreciate and understand why we would want to modify North Kelsey, considering how it has evolved. Downtown, I wasn't involved in North Kelsey, but I was with downtown, and Dave has his passion, I guess I have mine. I wouldn't want downtown to be modified, if you will, or some of its regulations or vision dropped off. And I don't think that's what is being asked of us. But I think, considering timing that is being required on this, because I think there is a time limit on this particular project as well, is it something that we can take downtown off and deal with that, moving it from the comp plan into the zoning regulations at a later date? Or does that interfere with the overall goal? Because my concern is that because we've never been a group to rubber stamp anything, this could get very lengthy in time, and we might see ourselves with the challenge of meeting these deadlines. Just a thought as far as that goes, could we move downtown to a later date? If not, we must do it. But the other part is, when we do downtown, if it's now, my concern is that that really doesn't get modified.
Yeah, I haven't started my own head how to really do this exercise in terms of taking language out of the comp plan, because I haven't found the exact language that adopted and referenced these things. And then it becomes a matter of for downtown, for example, the downtown design guidelines, and there's two different sets of guidelines, both reside in the municipal code and have been adopted and referenced as zoning regulations.
Yeah, we have a master plan. I believe it's a separate document, a master plan for that.
The master plan may well be able to reside, stay within the comp plan, since the master plan is policy-based. And maybe that entire master plan document still resides within the comp plan, or as that may be referenced in the comp plan and as a separate reference but adopted document. And maybe the same with North Kelsey, that there may be not the plan itself, but perhaps the policies related to certain aspects of that plan may be kept in the comp plan, but specific things related to the village green or the public open space and some of the original intents of that be deleted from the comp plan. And certainly the design guidelines should not reside in the comp plan anyway, but and as I said, are now resident in the zoning code where they do belong. But I haven't quite figured this out yet.
Dave?
Well, Paul, I can't help but agree with you. We seem to know what we want to do with North Kelsey. We don't have a clue what we're going to do downtown. How are we going to do it concurrently?
We've been trying to do downtown. We started in 1961, and we had people come in from Leavenworth and try to make us a village like Leavenworth till back in the 60s. We tried to get people to paint their buildings. We couldn't find the people who owned the buildings because they lived someplace else. It's been going on like that for years. There's so many we have even done. Every time something's been done downtown, when the building burns down, and then you build it again. So I don't have an answer to that. And we've been working on that for years. We and Chamber of Commerce worked very hard back in the 50s and 60s, trying to trying to get something done downtown, never have a bit. I don't have an answer.
I still believe there's a lot of potential for downtown. When I came here, when I was first here almost a year ago, for a few days and had some time downtown, and there's a lot of good things about this downtown. I've done a lot of downtown revitalization, and there's a tremendous amount of potential here. Take this one out.
Good for you.
Going on to another point from that meeting on February 7th, I've gotten some feedback from council, pushback, if you will, about the commissions, and I don't think they have disagreement with the fact of trying to dig into things and consider them pretty carefully, and I don't think that's the issue so much as the issue is delaying and not respecting the deadlines that are being set forth by council for this whole docket program, the docket in particular, which is on an accelerated schedule for, you know, this resolution that was adopted for this calendar year only, where we approve the comp plan amendments mid-year as opposed to late in the year. Council has some concerns about the attitude of the commission that, well, we're going to take as much time as we need, and if that means this thing's get pushed back, then we push them back. They didn't take very kindly to that. I've had a couple different sources of feedback on that. And, my attitude is that we're all kind of caught in a hard place here. My attitude is that the Planning Commission serves as an advisory body. It's an apolitical body that considers the applications, tries to make some logical judgments and recommendations. And the council is very much a political body that takes that advice, but in a different context in some cases. And it's not unusual at all. I've seen an awful lot of disconnect between commissions and councils, planning commissions, park and recreation commissions, development review boards that are overturned by council actions, and it's not always taken very well. In fact, one place was that the council decided to dismantle the development review board because they didn't like what they were bringing them. So they just put them out of business. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the conflict that caused. But I think the charge we have, this commission remains trying to do that logical analysis and make a good faith recommendation. But now we're caught up in this timeline, and in terms of the projects that are up here, we have a lot of projects, a lot of work. East Monroe, we're looking at a few meetings to work through that. Same with First Air. First Air, I think we're not that far off on First Air. We're really focused on this land use definition and how that's going to make that work, but not too much controversy with that. East Monroe is a whole other story, and this body may reach the same recommendation that it did, the last two times, three times, a couple of times, and I may reach the same conclusion. We have the marijuana, the cannabis code coming up that needs to be dealt with. We have this sign code update, which is really basically kind of a cherry-picking exercise to try and fix a number of things as opposed to a grandiose rewrite, because we simply don't have the time to do as much as we'd like to in this first round, but to try and take care of some immediate conflicts and problems. But all of this is under some pretty ambitious deadlines. There's a lot of people out there to say, we're going to get this done.
Well, if I may, real quick, Dave, jump in, since I was the one who made the comment about we don't do anything quickly.
I'm not trying to dodge anybody, but I don't get the sense that they don't like what you're doing so much as they don't like us taking so much time that it's going to blow the schedule.
And I can appreciate that, and I understand the importance of schedules, and I wasn't trying to imply that we weren't going to meet the deadline. It's just that we have some heavy thinkers on this on this commission, and even with some of the comments you've written down, I think and as I said there, we take pride in the fact that we really consider things deeply, and sometimes stump staff on some things. So. We're not trying to cause trouble, but do our job well, I guess. And I hold to the fact that I think I take pride in that. But I appreciate a schedule, and that's why I brought up the situation with downtown possibly separating it from this in an effort to maintain the schedule, but still complete what needs to be done. Dave, you had something I
could... I'd like to go back to the question you raised, and I seconded, and that was, Paul, how do we do both at the same time when on the downtown we don't have any idea what's going to be done there? I mean, the mayor talked about a plaza. There was talk about parking in the discussion. There was talk about reconstruction of Fremont, which is already in the downtown subway plan, of course. And there was talk about this brand new idea of Hill Street, an extension to the west, incorporation, two traffic circles on 182nd Blueberry Lane. He laid out a huge agenda of topics for the downtown area, many of which are conditioned upon things that this city doesn't have any control of, one being the school district property. And many of them know that they want to participate in that Hill Street idea. Two, the lack of public property down there for a plaza area. I just don't see how they can be tied together and processed at the same time frame. I mean, the North Chelsea, if that's the way it's going to go, if that's the way it needs to go, perhaps, so be it. That's the way it can go, and it can probably do so in a fairly timely manner. But to me, that downtown, it's a whole different story. I think they need to be separated.
You might have a good point there, and I don't disagree with that at all. The only sure thing in the downtown plan, as sure as it can be at this point, is the Fremont reconstruction. That, in fact, I think that goes to council tomorrow night to pick a level A, B, C for the redevelopment of that street, the reconstruction. Downtown master plan had this A, B, C plan, almost like good, better, best. Good being, or A being bare bones, an engineer's dream. Utilities, streets, no frosting on the cake. B had a median down the center of the street, no bike lanes. And C, A and C both had, I think it was a three-lane street section, but the C has the three-lane vehicular bike lane each side and some amenities like the street trees and so forth. And there's not a tremendous difference, maybe 5-10% from one alternative to another. I think the highest one is about $2.2 million for Fremont. But they're scheduled to make a decision, or at least it's on the agenda tomorrow night, to give some direction of whether they want A, B, or C. So that's one project. The others, the Civic Plaza, the Hill Street, what the improvements might be, they're strictly concepts. So it may make sense in a way to deal with North Chelsea to solve that immediate issue and set some direction to say the proceeds from Chelsea are going to be used to improve these other areas with some decisions that have to be made about it. Obviously, we can't do all of this. We can't do all of these projects. We've got to prioritize. But there's no reason, I mean, by undoing Chelsea and with those results, we don't really have a handle on what we're going to do with it. So they are really two separate things. I'm not sure how we work through that, or how council works through that. I can tell you that I talked with the school district this past fall. Has it been that long? Maybe late last year, about the Memorial Stadium in Marshall Field, if I have the names right, about it actually getting them on the docket to amend the comp plan on this year's docket.
and they weren't ready to move quite that quickly, but they are very seriously considering disposing of those fields. And we have a joint meeting with the district this week or next week. I think it's next week, like a biannual joint meeting. So that's going to be, that's about the first thing on the agenda. So we'll know a little bit more about that. But again, it's an idea. It's a concept. It's not a direct connection.
I don't think it's something you can adopt a comp plan on or subarea on.
Pardon me?
It's not substantial enough to adopt comprehensive planning on at this point.
No.
We don't know.
I don't think so.
Regarding downtown, I think North Kelsey, I think, I don't want to speak for the public, but I think most of us have kind of figured out that will never look as though it was originally intended. As far as downtown goes, I was on the steering committee, and I remember a public plaza and everything was discussed, but I don't remember it really being the forefront. And I guess my question is, and I'm not expecting an answer to, is if I can piggyback Jeff's comments on talking to the businesses downtown and the property owners downtown, is that something that is a big priority for them? Or has the city been in conversation with downtown regarding, with Dream or whoever, regarding this plan? Because maybe those funds can be used in a better way or a different project that the private sector sees would really be more impactful. And I'm not trying to challenge the mayor or what their plans are, but it sounds almost like, well, we couldn't achieve that in North Kelsey, let's try to achieve the same thing in downtown, because that was part of the plan, and maybe there's a better way to look at it, and that's something that we tend to start to delve into. So again, another reason why I think downtown should be separated, but I would like to be able to take the time to talk to Dream and the property owners and see what their vision is, especially if the mayor and the council was committed to shifting resources to that ultimate goal of revitalizing downtown. Bridget?
I also agree that they should be separated, because I think that the downtown is a big project. But as far as the property owners downtown, a lot of them don't even live around here, and I'm not really concerned with what they want to see downtown. I do know a lot of business owners downtown, and they want whatever is going to facilitate more walking traffic and that kind of thing. And I do think that the downtown should be adhering to what the city designs for it, and be less about what everybody's different opinions are, because we know that we can't all agree on everything. But to, you know, for Vicki and for a lot of the people that are involved in Dream, they definitely want to revitalize down there, whatever that looks like. But I agree that it should be separated, because I don't even like it appearing that one's contingent on the other, that they're linked really in any way, unless we decide there's some kind of financial link. But they're two completely different things. And as you know, with the downtown projects too, I don't think it's that we couldn't do it here, so we should do it there. I think it's knowing that it needs to be somewhere, and the downtown is really where it should have been in the first place. So we're going to make that happen, but it's the heart of the community. And it's needed to be focused on for a long time. But
I was involved in the charrettes that we really had, where we had the public involved, and I thought they were well done, because it really took the public opinion, as varied as it was, and focused it. And then I was also involved in the steering committee, which there was a property owner, and she owns the property at the bookstore. And
she lived in Kirkland?
Yes.
Lana Stevens.
Lana Stevens, yes.
And she was very involved.
She was very, she wanted downtown to be revitalized as well. And So yeah, when I say to the, you know, I still think property owners, but business owners, Dream, and you know, whoever else is involved, to look at that, because I think there was some, we recently had a discussion, I think about, well, I shouldn't say recently, it's been a couple of years now, about signage and creating these waypoints as you come into town to direct you into downtown, and I don't see that, I don't recall that ever being implemented, and it sounds to me like, from what I understand, there is a financial link between the two. There's sell the property in North Kelsey and put it into downtown, and I guess I just was throwing the question out. Is trying to buy some property to create a public plaza the best thing for downtown? And I think we should ask the question, and maybe that's what most of the business owners in downtown feel. And maybe they feel there's another way that can be utilized.
Paul, I think that the, in response to that, I totally agree with what you're saying. I just want to be careful, too, that we don't do what we did in North Kelsey all over again, where we spend all this time on money and money getting people's opinion and creating something that can't be accomplished because we don't in the end have the power to force that to happen. That, you know, I know that there was a lot of time and energy and finances that went into the whole North Kelsey, all the focus groups and all that stuff. So that's all. I want to see the city make a decision about what we want Monroe to be and start implementing those things and make it happen. And if we have some money coming from North Kelsey, then yeah, let's do that and let's make a priority list on which projects can and can't happen. In the end, the city has to be the ones to do a lot of that stuff and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I think I probably wasn't communicating well on this. I think I don't want to revisit the downtown master plan or change any of it. I think with having a plaza as was one of the ideas in the master plan. I think there might be other ideas within the master plan that might be better, and I could see making a list, like you say, of these are the things that the master plan says, these six things, send it out, say, give us your priority and see what it is, and maybe change the focus is all.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you say that Civic Academy place, the festival lot, because the official term was a direct take from the downtown master plan, but any of that needs to be revisited and reconfirmed and say, is this what we should be doing at this point with this money, or are there other projects that should be considered? And then my other comment is, in any successful downtown revitalization I've dealt with, at some point in the process, the property owners and the business owners, some of them are tenants, need to get, what's that expression, skin in the game. Mm-hmm. They need to step up. Because I have a couple of communities where we did an awful lot of public investment, and there was no in-kind action by the property owners. We set up facade programs and low interest loan pool and so forth, and nobody stepped up.
The tenants
do. It's disheartening when that happens.
The tenants do. A lot of them have put a lot of skin in.
Yeah, and I think actually, if you did ask them, they might, one of the biggest things I remember was one of their desires was the parking garage. Mm-hmm. So, who knows, that may be what they would prefer, and that may not be feasible either.
So in my experience, there's a perceived problem of not having parking, but I go downtown fairly often, different time of the day. I have never had a problem finding a place to park my car.
I have. I've driven around blocks many times trying to get a spot.
Guess I'm picking the wrong days to go.
Or the right ones.
So,
do you have anything else?
Oh, one other quick thing. Brad passed me a note. He's working on that East Monroe environmental impact statement. He wanted me to ask, particularly the longer serving members of the commission, if you've seen a 1968 or 1980 comprehensive plan of Monroe, you cannot find anything that goes back that far.
We need to call Tony.
Tony, yeah.
You know, Jerry Wilson.
Jerry with the James.
Yeah, Jerry Wilson. He's moved, but knowing Jerry, he probably has kept stuff. I don't have any back then. I wasn't here that long ago.
What was the other one?
Oh, Tony.
Oh, Tony's ball.
He probably would have had in 1980.
He seems to produce papers from... He collected it somewhere.
Tony Ball?
Tony Ball.
Oh, that's where your account is.
Cross number. Oh, yeah, okay.
You might know where to find one.
Yeah.
In a vault somewhere.
And what about your Human Historical Society? Kim? Any thoughts? You probably been asked. We had a comp plan in 1980?
Apparently so. But we don't have any record of it. We don't have any copy of it. The records here are hidden. Brad done quite a bit of searching in the archives. We have lots of records in the archives, and it may well be back there somewhere, but if you can't find it, it's not much good.
All right. Suggestion, Paul? Well, you're going to counsel more than I presume. What about taking this question of whether these two things should be tied, kept together or separated to them tomorrow night?
Why not?
Anything else?
Not for me.
Great. Bridget, anything?
No, thank you.
Bill?
No.
Jeff?
No.
Okay.
We still have a vacancy, Paul. Is there any news on that?
No, I haven't checked lately. I think we did some advertising and so forth, but I don't know if anything's been done lately. I think at this point, I keep asking people, well, most of them are say, do you know anybody? Any suggestions? Ask your friends.
I'm to apply.
And they run the other way, don't they?
What is that?
It's really difficult trying to find someone to step up here.
I don't have anything else, thank you.
Okay.
No.
I don't have anything either. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'd make the motion to adjourn.
Second. Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Paul.